This week in tennis.
Hey, Craig, now that the ATP Tour has let the cat out of the bag and we know everything is scripted, we're about to let the tennis world know a new secret. We're going to tell them all, Craig, what a summer girl is. What do you think about that?
Well, it certainly was an interesting week with that promotional bit of work from the ATP, which a lot of people on Twitter have been taking very seriously. I'm sure you and I could spend multiple shows talking about that. Let's move on. Summer girls, take us away.
Summer girls. I never heard the term before until I went to Corfu and taught tennis. It's a saying they use for pretty girls who play tennis only during the summer. And I kind of labeled Emma Raducanu as a summer girl. And I was wondering what you think about that, Craig, because, you know, they're talking a lot about history these days and the tours and how will history view some of these folks. Ons Jabeur has never won a major. And yet she was the underdog to Emma Raducanu the other day. What is this world coming to? Is it the major that did it? Is it the major that people care about more? Because I'm curious as to what you think how history will view people like Ons Jabeur, Emma, Carolina Pliskova, Jessica Pegula, Maria Sakkari, Tsitsipas, Rublev. Let's go. What do you think? But summer girl, would Emma Raducanu be considered a summer girl?
No, she'd be considered a fall girl. That's where she's had her success. Anytime she's turned up in the summer, she's been eliminated from Wimbledon pretty quickly. She doesn't win grass court tournaments. That's traditional British summertime, obviously. On the tennis tour, it's summer pretty much 75% of the season round, right? They play in the sunshine in Australia. They play in the sunshine in the Middle East or in Mexico or South America at this time of year. Then they come across here for the spring, summer in Europe, and then over to the US where the summer maybe, you know, it extends into August, September. So for most of the year, it's summer on the tennis tour. But the bigger question you asked there was, how will history remember the likes of Ons Jabeur, Stefanos Tsitsipas? It won't. I'm sorry, but these people are going to be footnotes in the tennis history, that you will see their name next to other more successful names that we're talking about. And you just need to look at the last generation of players over the 20 years. Do you hear anybody talking about David Ferrer now? There's a guy who was the top five, top four player at some points of his career. He was in the top 10 for a long, long time. You ain't talking about that guy now. He never won a slam. He got to a slam final, but he never won a slam. So why would you be talking about him? He's not Andy Murray or Stan Wawrinka, guys who've won three slams each. So when you talk about Ons Jabeur, she's not won a slam. But Emma Raducanu has. She did it as a qualifier. And for whatever you want to say, Emma Raducanu's won a slam. Caroline Wozniacki's won a slam. Sophia Kenin's won a slam. These people will be remembered because they won the big one. And that's how it is. Unfortunately, you know, being the best of the little guy or the best of the little girls and winning the small tournaments, I don't think you're going to remember these people. Who talks about Vera Zvonareva these days?
Nobody does.
Nobody. Because she didn't win one. She got to finals. She got to number two in the world. How about Agnieszka Radwanska? Anyone talking about her these days? No.
Only on Tennis Channel.
Because they're talking about Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. Because she won slams. They talk about Sharapova because she won slams. Hell, they talk about Anna Ivanovic because she won a slam. But they ain't talking about these people who were there for 10 years and didn't win anything. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's true. But it's also unfair because, you know, when you look at tennis, it's more than just winning a major. If you, you know, try to qualify a player's career based on a major victory, 99% of them would be failures. That's unfair. Now, let's go with Ons Jabeur, for example. first Tunisian female ranked in the top five. That they'll be talking about her forever there. Her life is set. Even if she never made a nickel, even if this was all for free, her life would be set because of that success from that country. Carolina Pliskova, you know, I think that we forget that that's a pretty tall girl, right? And she has some health issues that kept her out of it. But I would say that for a period of about 18 months, Craig, her serve was pretty much unstoppable, except during those four fortnights we call the Grand Slams, the major season. You know, I don't know. I view them a lot differently than you do. But as far as Emma goes, Emma's a summer girl, bro. She ain't serious. She's not serious.
She don't have to be serious. She's a star.
Yeah,
you know, but when you're a star, you don't have to be serious. You know, Anna Ivanovic wins one slam. That's it.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between what Anna Ivanovic did and what Emma Raducanu has done. You know,
but it's also a different world now, right? When Anna Ivanovic was coming to prominence, you didn't have online influencers. You know, these social media people who basically act as a personality for selling you products, etc., etc. That's huge money. You know, you look at people out there, whether it's Logan Paul, his brother, KSI, you know, these are nobodies in the grand scheme of things. They're people who sell you products. But right. The tennis world and a lot of these kids who have come into the tennis world have figured out that you can actually make more money doing this than you can do playing tennis. You know, you get $1 million, $2 million if you win a slam and your name goes in the history books. But a lot of these kids have figured, right, okay, it's pretty difficult to win a slam. It's even more difficult not just to win a slam, but to win a succession of slams and have a 10-year career in tennis, more so if you're a woman and you have other interests in life. So becoming an influencer, becoming a magazine star, let me reference my favorite female tennis player of the last 10 years, Eugenie Bouchard. She's got it made. You know, she never won a slam, but she was a good looking girl. She graced the covers. She's probably made a lot more money using tennis as a platform to becoming an influencer than she ever would do through her tennis ability. And she was actually quite a good player for about 18 months. She was potential to be a top player, but realized that the money's elsewhere. And I think a lot of the kids in the tennis world are doing that. The history books don't really matter to them. It's about making bank for them. So when we come to talk about actual tennis players, you're right. Ons Jabeur, in terms of what she's achieved as a Middle Eastern African woman who of Arabic descent, has broken boundaries, opened doors for young girls in the Arabic communities, in the African communities, across a significant chunk of the world where tennis is not played particularly to a high level by both male and female athletes. She has been a pioneer. We might not talk about her in the same way that you would talk about Billie Jean King or Martina Navratilova, but there are similarities in the boundaries that she's broken. But unfortunately, the fact that she hasn't delivered on a major yet and her opportunities to do that look like they're slipping away as new players come onto the tour, I think she will become more of a footnote over time. You're not going to look up historical data on female tennis and see Ons Jabeur as one of the first names on the list. She's not going to sit there with Navratilova. She's not going to sit there with Billie Jean King or Serena Williams or you know, the big one that I've just missed, Venus Williams. But her impact has definitely been significant. It's just, unfortunately, you know, life's not fair. And sometimes you can achieve great things and never quite get the recognition for it on a global level that you deserve.
Yeah, you know what, though? But the whole point is that it's unfair to these kids. When you talk about Eugenie Bouchard, she's earned that right to model. You know, she was a great tennis player as a junior. You know, they did put the work in. You don't just walk out on tour and say, here I am, and they give you millions of dollars. You still have to earn it. And I think that history is going to be a lot. Well, it won't be favorable, but here's the thing, though, is you can use this type of thing to your advantage when you bet. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from what this is all about, is that how people view these players has a direct correlation to how they're set up on the odds board, Craig. And that's something you can take advantage of, because there is not a way in the world, for example, that Ons Jabeur should be an underdog to Emma Raducanu, is what I'm saying. And when you look at the overall sum of the parts, Emma Raducanu might have a major, but she has not accomplished anything on a tennis court like any of these people we just mentioned. That's my whole point. She's a summer girl. She's got excuses all the time. Injuries all the time, Craig. So I think the history, while it might view these players poorly, it also is good for us if we're betting on tennis to take advantage of this, these funny ideas people have and how they judge athletes and how they judge their careers. What do you think, Craig?
Well, all I can say to that is history will look back at Raducanu as being the first player to enter yep. as a qualifier and win a slam. So that'll be a particularly significant event in the history of WTA Tour women's yep. tennis, men's tennis as well, I guess.
Well, there won't ever be a qualifier to do that in the men's.
So, well, it's very unlikely, you know, unless someone comes out of absolutely nowhere with a sublime skill set, but it's unlikely. However, you know, just to go back and throw another example at it, you look at Ons Jabeur and all that she's achieved, but who's history going to remember? Ons Jabeur or Naomi Osaka?
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, and you know which one it's going to be.
Well, of course. And that's unfortunate because, you know, I would never say a thing like Ons Jabeur quit in a tennis match. I don't believe that she's ever quit. You know, I think she's very similar to Osaka. If she had Osaka's weapons, she'd already have a major, mental meltdowns aside. You know?
So here's maybe the punchline, right? Is it the duration of performance that's significant, or is it the impact of the event? Because you look at Emma Raducanu, it was 3 weeks, right? She came through the qualifiers, she won the US Open. Her impact on tennis has been pretty much 3 weeks. Naomi Osaka, maybe 3-4 years. But you look at some people who have impacted the game, like Jabeur, for probably the past 10 seasons. And the significance of her impact and the number of people that she's impacted on, and yet it won't be remembered as favorably as somebody who turned up and had success within 3 weeks and made a you know, very pointed impact in such a short time. So it's interesting that the duration doesn't seem to be the defining point on how somebody's remembered. It's the impact in the moment, perhaps.
I would prefer the longevity, duration, how durable you are, how long you've maintained your career. You know, not everyone wins a major, but that doesn't mean they failed. I mean, you know, when you talk about players, you talk about goals. You know what? Winning a major is a great goal, but it's not a realistic one for anyone. It really isn't. And, you know, it's nice to have that thing in your sights, but you want to support your family. You know, look where most of these kids are from, the most successful ones are from, and you'll see where they're from and why they are successful, because they don't want that life. You know, I think some of these players probably don't have those things. Emma Raducanu being one. Jess Pegula, no worries in her life. Maria Sakkari, no worries in her life. Stefano Tsitsipas, no worries in her or his life. So, I mean, you have those things. But as far as this back to the betting thing, though, is that why in the world would anyone have Ons Jabeur as an underdog against Emma Raducanu? It doesn't make any sense when you look at their careers, though. And this is the whole point of this show, is to help people win money. And it's this. when you look at their careers, I'm going to take Ange Jabeur. I'm never going to hang Ange Jabeur as an underdog against Emma Raducanu for any reason or any situation. And I think that when you see these, you can take all the hype and all the twidiots and all the foolishness and use that to your advantage.
Well, you know how the betting world works better than I do. Often the betting, the spread starts based upon achievement, upon recent form, potential injury, whatever information is available to the odds maker. However, if somebody comes in and puts down a million big ones on Emma Raducanu, that significantly changes the price.
Right.
That's how the betting world works, right? The odds maker who's going to take your bet has to cover their potential losses in case Raducanu does win the match. And that's in tennis. There is actually quite a risk of that, because if there's any suspicion that Jabeur maybe has an injury, you know, something that restricts her movement or ability to hit the ball, and there's an insider has a tip on that and just put down $1 million on Raducanu, then the odds maker's got to balance the books to make sure they don't get cleaned out. So that's a little bit of how the trading works.
Right, of course.
In tennis, there are no draws in tennis, right? It's not like a soccer match where you have that mid-range on the draw and you can adjust the prices three ways. There's, there's only two outcomes in tennis. Somebody wins a match, or they lose a match. And, you know, that can be taken. There's always that risk that if somebody's carrying some sort of injury, they could lose a match quite quickly. It could be something that happens over the space of 5 minutes. So that's probably why you got such a good price on Jabeur. It wasn't based upon the fact that the odds maker thought that Raducanu is a better player and was going to win the match. They may have had somebody come, or multiple people put significant amounts of money down on Raducanu, which suggested to them that there was insider information somewhere that they were at risk of losing out. So in the end, you won out.
Yes, and that's why? Because I don't judge these players the same way most people do. And I think that's the whole point. See, there is not a way in the world, if I'm having a tennis conversation about WTA players, that I'm going to name Emma Raducanu over Ange Jabeur when it comes to skill, when it comes to talent, and when it comes to career accomplishments. That Grand Slam means nothing to me, because here's why. She's not followed it up with any result yet. She's been to one semifinal in her entire career, and that was the U.S. Open. She's been to one final in her career, U.S. Open. After that, she's done nothing. You can say all these things you want about injuries and blah, 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 but at the end of the day, when you look at the betting board, you have to take in consideration a lot more than just recent form. And that's where you're going to make your money every single time. People say to me all the time, Craig, why is it that you're always playing underdogs? Because that's where you make money in tennis, betting underdogs. But betting underdogs with great information and making a good decision based on that. You know, this hype train out there with the social media is a boon for bettors if they know what they're doing. And you can do that. And, you know, we're not picking on Emma Raducanu really, because, and why we're even spending so much time is because this next thing that happened on social media that we want to talk about this, that happened this week, was very interesting to me, Craig. Holger Rune, you know, the Dane superstar, really. And we're going to get into why he is in a second, or why he could be. He's had some coaching changes. Quite a few of them. Now he's not with Boris Becker, or I can't remember who the other one was, but he was with those two. And now they're not with him. They say they didn't have the time commitment. That sounded funny. But people were saying on Twitter, Craig, why is it that you give Holger Rune a pass for changing coaches as often as he does, and yet you crucify Emma Raducanu for doing the same thing? A little background, if you don't know, Emma Raducanu has probably had, what, Craig, 6-7 coaches since her victory at the U.S. Open? So I guess let's delve right into this, pal. What do you think? Why is it that this isn't the same thing?
Well, it's not the same thing, because Holger Rune, very young man, has had a sustained period of success already in his career. He currently sits in the top 10 players in the world. He's consistently been in and around the top 10 players in the world. He's at number 7 at the minute. He's won titles. He's won, I think, 4 titles in his short career thus far. He's got a winning record on tour the last couple of years. He's gone out there. He's, you know, I think last year he won like 44 matches or something like that on tour and lost 24. So pretty successful. He's sustained in the top 10. He doesn't look like he's going to drop out of the top 10. He looks like a very solid clay court player. He put on a good performance at Roland Garros, probably in the mix in future to be a potential winner of that tournament. He's a guy who regularly gets to the latter stages of pretty much every tournament he plays. It's not really it's not like him to go to a tournament and you think, oh, this guy's not gonna deliver. He's probably gonna get to a quarterfinal. It's an expectation. He tends to fulfill those expectations as well. Compare with Raducanu, who just, there's no expectation on Raducanu to get to any sort of final or have any sort of success. She's had that, as we pointed out in the opening segment of this conversation, she has won a Grand Slam, which Holger Rune hasn't. However, at the moment, Holger Rune he's won a Masters, he's won a couple of 500s, 250s, but he's in the top 10, and every tournament you go into, you're going to get a pretty good price on Holger Rune, and he's going to deliver a pretty solid amount of success. He's 7-3 this year already. He's not won a title, but it's hard to look at him and say this guy is not going to be successful at some time in the future. He could end up being a bit like Alexander Zverev, in which case another player who has failed to win a slam but has been moderately successful at the Masters level, won the ATP Tour Finals, he's played well. That could be where we end up with Holger Rune. Or he could end up being more like a Casper Ruud or a Daniel Medvedev type player, where he will win a slam at some point. And I think the expectation is, looking at the trend of his performances, he's on the upwards curve. For him to be changing coach, I think it's difficult to criticize a guy, because he's looking for the guy that takes him from 7 to 5 to 3 in the world. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for the micro adjustments that take him up the way on the ladder. And he's gotten pretty high with what he's had. And now he's making that change. And I look at it quite a lot like Andy Murray. Andy Murray had a succession of coaches early in his career before he kind of settled on something that worked for him. And I think that's where Holger Rune's gone. He's taken himself as far as he can with his current setup. He's tried a few different people to see if he can get himself back up to that career high of 4, push himself higher than 4. Why wouldn't he want to change coaches to fine-tune the final parts of his game? Because 99% of his game's there. He needs the extra 1% to take him to the next level and win a slam. With Raducanu, it's completely different. She won the slam early. There were lots of holes in the game. She was bringing in lots of different people to work on lots of different things. It didn't work. You know, she's probably got 60, 70% of the game, and she's got a lot that she needs to figure out. With Holger Rune, I think, you know, it's almost like 99% of the jigsaw is complete and he's looking for the last piece somewhere.
Yeah, that's interesting, all those things you said. You kept bringing up slam wins. There you go again. Always trying to chase a slam and judging people by slams. Forget about slams, okay? This is a very simple thing. Emma Raducanu and Holger Rune both have the same coach since they were little kids, their parents, okay? Holger Rune has been coached by his mother since day one. She knows more about his tennis game than anyone. Emma Raducanu has been coached by her father the same way. He knows more about her game than anyone. Here's the difference, though. Is before the U.S. Open, 2021, how many of you listening had ever heard of Emma Raducanu at all? You didn't, did you? You never have. You didn't hear much about her in juniors. You heard little things, you know, because she was just a part-time player, a summer girl. And Holger, though, Holger's a little different. You know, and bless her, she won the major. She got up there to the top 10, but she hasn't stayed there. And, you know, if it weren't for the U.S. Open and that victory, Craig, she'd be ranked where she is now, around 300, where she is. That's who she is. Holger Rune got in the top 10 without any help, without any majors under his belt. He's already achieved that. He's one of five players born after the year 2000 with 100 tour victories. The list is like this. Sinner, Alcaraz, Felix, Auger-Aliassime, Holger Rune, and now Sebi Korda has hit, he won his 100th match without a major. And so there's five players with 100 matches, tour wins, born after 2000. That's pretty big, right? See, he's earned that spot. So when he changes these people, it's a little different. Emma changes people based on a lot of different factors, you know? And the end of the day is Emma Raducanu can change coaches every day, for all I care. She's never going to win another one. Never. See, look at her. As far as Holger goes, I don't care if he ever does. The whole point is his mama's his coach, okay? He can get there or he can get there if he changes coaches every single day. Because when he steps on the court, that person on the other side of the net, including Djokovic, respects that person, respects Rune. There's not a single player on the WTA Tour that doesn't go into a match against Emma Raducanu thinking they can't win, Craig.
But by the same token, there's not a single player goes into that match with Emma Raducanu thinking, I really wish it was me that won that slam.
Oh, of course. There's a lot of that too, of course. Yeah. Yeah. They all know she was lucky. They're jealous. You know what? They're happy for her because their goal is to do that, right? To make that kind of money. But when you come down to criticizing these kids and their decisions, I mean, let's just keep Emma and Holger away from each other with the comparisons. They're not the same. You know, they're not. Again, if Holger Rune never wins a major, and he may not, you know, he's got health issues. He's been trained pretty, how do I say this, unorthodoxically, and that has a big problem too. That causes problems. You know, he's more into the physical side of things, and that's a different thing. But to answer all their questions, it's not the same thing. And again, that goes back to how we look at betting odds the same way. You know, look at the conversation Craig and I are having. You know, we're disagreeing about certain things, little things. Craig thinks that judging players based on a major is how you should, and major victories, where I don't believe that. So when I see the betting odds, I think, why is Emma a favorite against a player who's gotten to three major finals and reached number two without winning a major? You know, little things like that, it'll help you win a lot more money along the way. And speaking of that, Craig, beginning March 1st, I am going to be publishing a daily newsletter. I'm going to give it away for free. You can get it at philnasonsrights.com. It's called Chip and Charge Premium Newsletter, and we'll be sending out some tips and little things like this and links to real articles, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but things that will help you win more money betting on tennis, help you understand the betting world more than you do, and how to take advantage of situations like this one I did earlier this week with Ange Dupuis and Emma Raducanu. So we need to do that, Craig, because, you know, the Australian Open brought this up again. It's the viewing opportunities and the TV commentary. People are starting to become furious, Craig. Why is that?
I have no idea. I couldn't see the Australian Open, so I wasn't able to help you anything about it.
Right, right. I saw, the same thing happened at the U.S. Open for a lot of people in the United States.
You sent me the link. They're attempting to fix it, and I might be able to see the tour again shortly. They've introduced some new channels in the last day or so that will allow me to actually see it, but I can't really comment on what happened at this show, you know, because I was only able to see the main feed via a VPN link from another country. So
let me help you. Sinner won, and they heard it here first.
Well, there you go.
That's right. I picked a winner. I finally picked a tournament winner, Craig.
You finally picked a tournament winner.
I never do those. I never do those. I suck at that. But I was lucky. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But I was so busy patting myself on the back, I wanted to finish.
No, you were talking about the quality of the commentary and the punditry. But, yeah, I was unable to access most of what I wanted to see. So I really can't comment on how good or bad, I assume, that the punditry and commentary on that was. I saw most of the reaction I saw was the social media related comments from ex players and pundits and right. TV personalities. But unfortunately, with the situation I had here, I was unable to view what was going on at the Australian Open myself. But I'm sure you managed to catch enough matches to perhaps bring me up to speed on that.
Well, Jannik Sinner won, and that was great. Iga Świątek did what we thought she would do. She crashed her midway. Outside of that, it was a pretty straight thing. Carlos Alcaraz, you know, you anointed him a champion before you probably should have. You know, he didn't go so far, did he? Daniil Medvedev had a great tournament, a really great tournament. But you wouldn't know any of these things by listening to the TV commentary. And I've been following it. This was the very first tournament in probably 6 or 7 years that I didn't mute the sound so I could hear what people were actually complaining about. You know, basically, if you have ESPN Plus, for example, which I do have a subscription to for not just tennis, but for all sports, you know, I'm a writer and I do that for a living and I need those things. But at the end of the day, the commentary is just awful. It really is. ESPN Plus is a bunch of those British voices, summer girls, who make zero sense. In other cases, they sound like groupies, not the girls, the guys. That's a problem in tennis, is that the journalists and the commentators are more like groupies now. You know, you can hear it in their voice, how upset they are that their players lose it. You can hear it. You know, it's almost like if you close your eyes and just listen, you'd think only one person was playing a lot of times. And that's not good. And that's why the sports books clean up and why people like Emma Raducanu are favored over Ange Dubreuil. You know, so, but that's what happened at the Australian. But Craig, the commentary isn't very good. And what I'm wondering is, how do they fix it? How do you fix it? Because a lot of people who are skilled enough to do this job don't want to. They don't want to travel anymore. That's one of the biggest reasons that's one of the biggest reasons that tennis players retire. They're tired of traveling. And now you're going to put them back on the road for 40 weeks of the year? That's hard. So what do you do? How do you raise their level, Craig?
Well, as far as I know, the coverage here that Sky Sports are providing, these people are not traveling to the ATP or WTA events. Sky Sports has the contract now for all of the Masters, 500s, 250s, but all of the commentary and all of the punditry seems to be getting done from, or the largest portion of it, shall we say, is getting done from a studio in London. Right. It's been that way for quite a number of years prior to Sky losing the contract to Amazon. They would bring, it was all ex-British players, Virginia Wade, Annabelle Croft, Greg Rosetsky. They'd bring these people into a studio in London and they'd simply be offering opinions from that studio in London or whatever other city it was in the UK where they were sitting on matches that were being screened from, you know, Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, wherever. It's just become commonplace these days that a lot of the punditry can actually be done remotely now as part of the broadcast. So it's different for the slams. The slams, you do tend to see the pundits are on site at the slams and the commentary teams are on site at the slams. But for a lot of the lower level events, a lot of the personalities are now not present on the site of the event. They haven't traveled. They're probably going back home every night, and they come into the studio and they provide commentary throughout the day, or they provide expert analysis, shall we say, throughout the day. So the remote working aspect of it has definitely become more of a dominant feature in the coverage that I've seen here in recent years. And I think you're right. People generally don't want to travel out to the tournaments, particularly those who have been in the game for a significant amount of time, where the travel becomes detrimental to their actual personal lives away from work. I know, like, you know, as a photographer, you don't have a choice, right? You can't do photography from sitting at home.
Right.
You need to be courtside. But and there'll be certain things in the journalist realm where you need to be on the site to be able to sit down with people and be able to ask the questions that you need to ask. But the actual commentary part, it seems to be more and more remote these days. How do they improve it? Well, that's a good question, because I think they need to improve it by removing a number of these personalities they've been brought into the tennis punditry. They're analysts and they're experts. And a lot of these people struggle to stay within the top 100 in the world for a couple of years. This is coming from somebody who watches the British coverage. And I can tell you that there are people on there who, why would I want to listen to their expert opinion? I look in, like, the only one that's had any recent success in the last 30 years or so has probably been Tim Henman.
Right.
He's probably the one player there who had relatively long-term success in terms of his ranking. But when I look around and then, they put on Anne Kiothavong or Johanna Konta or... Ugh. You know, this kind of player, I'm like, what does this person have to offer me as a viewer in terms of an insight in how to win a major or how to go to a tournament somewhere and win it? I don't think any of these people have any of that, you know.
So that's your qualification, then they should have won a major to commentate on.
No,
you'll never have any commentary then, which might not be a bad idea.
Well, we will soon, because there's a guy about to exit the tour shortly who has
won Andy Murray
majors. But, you know, I'm not saying they have to win a major, but what have you actually won? I mean, Johanna Konta's never won anything.
Well, that doesn't mean she has to, you know. Okay, go. I'm sorry. I'll wait.
Let me carry on. She's been on the tour for a short amount of time. She's not really from here. You bring her on as an expert, and you put her on the Wimbledon coverage, and you ask her questions about how do you win a Wimbledon semi-final, she would know. She's no idea. She's never been that far.
But why would you need to ask her about those things? So her job is, the biggest gripe for fans, and I finally see it, is that the lack of knowledge. I mean, I don't give a shit if she doesn't know how to win a semi. She should know how to win matches. She should know how to analyze what she's able to see and what's currently happening. These players can't do that. These commentators don't do that. Look at Coco Gauff. Craig, 4 years ago, we told them that you got to fix that forehand and you got to fix the ball toss. Do you remember? We could run back the tape if we have to. And no one said a word until recently, right? You notice that? These people don't.
The commentary teams are told not to talk about that because people don't want to hear about it.
Well, it's then only you know what?
Like you and I that want to hear about it. People would rather hear about, you know, Black Lives Matters or whatever else Coco Gauff's into. That makes her more interesting to the casual audience than it does to you and I.
But it doesn't make us money. See, her out there supporting whatever cause she does, good for her. But that ain't helping me make money. You see, her supporting these things, that don't help me make money. And if I'm listening to a color commentator like, say, Catherine Whitaker, who doesn't know a thing about tennis, see, that's a big problem. What's her hook into all this? Billie Jean King, that's what. These voices are awful. And you know what? You can just go, but like, I pay for that ESPN Plus subscription, but I could just steal these games right off the internet if I want to. You know, I don't have to pay for this. And I certainly don't want to. But that's all part of how this works in the betting and how it affects the betting. Because whether we like it or not, and we don't, obviously, these people have a voice in the game. And how do you improve that? The first thing you do is get people in there who actually know what they're looking at. One of Konta's biggest problems was that she isn't a very good problem solver. So if she wasn't a very good problem solver for herself, what makes you think she's going to be able to point out the problems to solve in someone else? I don't believe that. And plus, you know, their voices are so faint because they don't have any confidence in what they do. Now, there are some really good ones. Christopher Eubanks is a damn good one. He is awesome. Chanda Rubin, awesome. Pekovic, awesome. But then you've got the ESPN crew. Most of them are way past their prime. What is Alexandra Stevenson doing on TV? Seriously, why is she on TV commentating on matches? Why? Because she got lucky for a week? She's the precursor to Emma Raducanu right there. But the end of the day is you need people who are knowledgeable, who provide actual insight to make the telecast better. And 98% of them don't, Craig. And the cost of these matches to watch all these apps and to have all this is starting to get costly. And to listen to someone like Catherine Whitaker, who's only ever carried Billie Jean King's water, no thanks. Why would we want to listen to these people, Craig? Why?
Well, none of them have a personality because they're not allowed to have a personality. You know, they try to get McEnroe kicked off TV over here because he's got opinions that don't align with the current broadcaster's view on what you should share. He's a polarizing character, but at least he's got his own opinion. You know, you don't have to agree with what John McEnroe says, but you should respect the fact that he's got an opinion. But they don't want these people on TV because if you've got an alternative opinion to the political narrative of the broadcaster that is presenting you tennis, then you are not welcome on that broadcast.
Right. See, that's
can you imagine Tennis Sandgren ever getting called up for commentary?
Well, he never will. No, or us.
Well, no, you know, I never will either because I've got a tendency to say what I'd like to say.
See, that's my thing too. Well, obviously, I do too. But the end of the day is that this commentary is really bad. And the other problem is the tennis journalism is equally bad. You know, I'm writing a column, a weekly column, 10 Things I Like, whatever it is, over at Passing Shot Productions. And I'm trying to curb all that, to change all that if I can, to try to break some narratives. Because these narratives are what cost you money, because you buy into the narratives. You bought into the narrative that the summer girl was going to beat the champion. Yeah, I know Ons never won a major, but she's still a champion. Emma just got lucky that she's never won anything, and she's never going to win anything. She just got lucky. But see, you won't hear that from the commentators because they gush over her. And when the other girl makes a shot, they go quiet. You know, that's not cool either. So what we need to do is get people into this sport who actually understand it and don't have any limitations, meaning I'm going to criticize Coco and not worry about being called a racist for doing so. But we have so many problems in the game today, but it all really revolves around the broadcast, the journalism. You know, when I was a kid, Craig, you know why I picked up a tennis racket? Because I was able to watch it on TV. Now, this was long before cable, but I was able to watch it. Pat Summerall, did a broadcast every Saturday or Sunday, something on ABC, Wide World of Sports or CBS Sports, something. And we got to see these people. And that made us want to go and ask our grandparents or our parents or whatever to take us to a match live. See, most of these kids can't see these matches, and a lot of them won't push to go in real life. And that's why your attendance is down. That's why everything's down. You know, there's more than just Emma Raducanu on tour. There's more than just Novak Djokovic on tour. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish now with the remaining days of my career, Craig.
No, I get it. But you know, it is what I said, the journalism probably fits in along with the broadcasting personalities in that the journalists are given a narrative that they have to follow. You're not allowed to go off the beaten path and offer your own opinions or say anything controversial. You got to stick with the narrative that the publication that you write for wants you to remain in tone with. I know that's the case because I know a number of journalists within the tennis industry. I've known them since I photographed. You know, there's a lot of great people out there, and they unfortunately have their hands tied with what they're allowed to write and when they're allowed to write it. They're not allowed to just go pick a topic and have at it, so to speak. Even if that would be a lot more interesting and a lot more informative to the people that they are, you know, their audience, you're not allowed to do that. You know, you've got to write in line with the expectations of the publication you have. So whether that's, you know, the New York Times, a Wall Street Journal, or you come over here, it's the Times newspaper, the Telegraph newspaper. The expectation is that your articles fit with the tone and the narrative set by that publication and the expectations of the reader base of that publication. So it's a difficult skill, and it means that you get a lot of bland journalism because people are not able to go explore topics like they used to be able to.
Well, I think it's a lot. Maybe there's a lot to that. Personally, these people are groupies. Look at these bloggers. And I have no problem with bloggers, but these tennis bloggers, most of them are nothing but groupies. And they're not being fair. And what they are doing is helping promote these narratives that we can exploit on the betting markets, because the public is, in the United States anyway, the public is driving those numbers. They don't let real bettors bet or winners bet. So basically the ones that are driving these numbers are losing bettors, and they're always going to fall for the narrative. Always. That's why they lose. That's why it's important to listen and seek out voices who don't always follow the norm. They're out there. You just have to look. I'll be highlighting some of those every week. I'm going to try to be one of those. You know, Craig, finally wrapping this up, and we haven't talked much about Dallas. I don't want to, but Delray Beach is coming up, and that's a 250 next beginning Monday. And one of the things I was commenting to you yesterday about that is this a deep-ass draw down in Delray. And Taylor Fritz is the defending champion. He's got a lot of points to defend. You know who's got a lot of points to defend is Miramir Kecmanovic. Remember, he got to the final there, so he's got a lot of points to defend. But listen to this roster. You got Taylor Fritz, Tommy Paul, Francis Tiafoe, Adrian Mannarino, maybe. He withdrew from his match in Dallas, so we'll have to see about him. Daniel Evans, that's your guy. Matteo Arnaldi, he's there. He's another exciting young player. Mackenzie McDonald, he has more wins than most Americans, but he's riding the struggle bus. Let me see who else is there. You know, Rinky Hijikata, he did a nice job the other day. I watched this match. Alexander Vukic is there. Yoshihito Nishioka is there. And Dominic Koeffer is there. He had a nice match win the other day for me. So it should be a lot of fun over at Delray. Craig, I'm going to have a betting preview up for that at Passing Shot Productions, and a lot of good things happening. And we're going to try to see if we can't make some better journalists out of there. What do you think?
Oh, I encourage you to go for it.
I have no choice. I can't allow these non-tennis people to continually push these narratives. It's costly. It hurts my ears, first of all. Second of all, it hurts the bettors. These people who you have commentating, most of them, like Catherine Whitaker, for example, good old Katie. No thanks. I wouldn't listen to her play dead.
I don't need to listen to her because I'm banned from her Twitter anyway. I'm sure banned me for asking a perfectly legitimate question about scheduling when she was off on one of her Billie Jean King-fueled agendas. She decided that instead of having an intelligent discussion on that, that it was easier just to ban me and label me as a sexist. So,
yeah, she's going to do that here too. Yeah,
the guy who's volunteered in women's soccer photography for the last, you know, decade plus, when two men and a dog were coming out to watch, is a sexist in that argument, which was quite interesting. How far off the mark she was, but yeah, I was blocked from her Twitter, so thankfully I don't need to see any of her posts or any of her content. And when she's on the TV, I just change the channel.
That's exactly what you do. Here's what you do: you find an announcer that you don't like, don't go on Twitter, because no one's going to get blackmailed or extorted by some anonymous voice on Twitter. Write an email to the production company behind it or the producers. Write those letters and say, listen, we don't want these people on air. They don't bring anything to the table. You know, you're better off just running a dead feed than paying a lot of these people who are nothing more than, you know, well, grifters, civilians. They don't belong in this game. They don't belong in this sport, and they're costing you money. Stop listening to them. Stop following them. Stop paying attention to what they say. Start seeking out some real voices who know. Stop paying for picks. That's another dumbass thing you do. Most of these people couldn't win a bet with tomorrow's newspaper. They wouldn't know which end of the tennis racket to pick up. You can go and look. PhilNasonsWrites.com. Look for my insider newsletter. You're going to see my betting results since I was able to bet on tennis. You're going to see this is legit. You can go back and listen to all these podcasts. You can say what you want about me personally. That's fine. But here's what you can't say, that we don't win. This podcast has been around 16 years and has probably given away well over $1 million in free cash. And we're going to continue. Great job today, Craig. I'm looking forward to Delray. I'm looking forward next week as we start preparing for the Sunshine Double, baby.
Yeah, we're few weeks away from that. It starts right at the beginning of March. We've got a
couple. Sure does. The girls. Your favorite tour.
I probably won't be covering that one or betting on it, but we've got a couple of 250s coming up in the US. So you're going to see a lot of US based players coming out for those. We've got the 500s in Rotterdam, then the week after in Mexico, and then the week after that we've got the big one in Dubai, where you're going to see some of the stars come out on the men's tour to play. And then we are off to Indian Wells, I believe.
And that's the way we like it. Lots of great tennis to talk about. Lots of money to win. We didn't give you any picks today because sometimes we just don't. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nason. Thanks for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.